Are you satisfied with your understanding of sustainability? If you are not, imagine a journey together, a pluralistic one, with academia, innovators, startups, NGOs, all looking for solutions to the greatest challenge of our time. My name is Samuele Tini, and this is the Sustainability Journey. Welcome to another episode, and today I'm thrilled. We are going to explore how to foster solution to climate change and biodiversity loss. And we do with an expert who has founded and now is the CEO of a venture capital fund, who is also a B Corp. And we know that we like B Corp, the Sustainability Journey. So I'm very pleased to welcome here Luca Zerbini. Luca, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to have you to be here with you.
Fantastic. Luca, I mean, you have done a wonderful, you have a incredible experience spanning businesses, Wall Street, and now you are at the helm of a transformational and innovative venture fund. But our question is always, who is Luca and what is your sustainability journey?
Thank you. That's a great question. So it probably started, you know, when I didn't even realize when I was a kid, I was born in Italy and I, you know, always loved nature. I was lucky enough that, you know, our family was able to travel across the world. And that's where I learned to love nature. And I remember as a kid being already part of WWF and National Geographic as a member. And I guess when I started my career, I always been, you know, passionate about growth and innovation. I was part of, you know, large corporation like Hewlett Packard, Honeywell, Amcor, always in B2B technology industrial companies. I was also Bain in consulting. I managed in here. So, of course, I love technology. I have also an MBA from Wharton. But the more I was spending time, the more I realized that, you know, there had to be a purpose for what we were doing. And all of a sudden, when, you know, after living for a number of years in the US, I moved back to Europe. I said, from now on, I only want to work for companies that have a really clear, you know, agenda to have an impact on the environmental side. And so I started with emission reduction for cars, then in packaging, also working a lot with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. Then I became, you know, the vice chairman of Packaging Europe Association. And then I continue with board positions, still to try to impact more and more industries in building efficiency, etc. And then I realized that if I wanted to do more, I could do it only by creating an organization that was investing in companies to accelerate the transition from an environmental perspective, but also social perspective. So that's a bit, in short, my movement into sustainability. And of course, I keep learning every day. But you know, I think now we can really impact a scale. The industry on sustainability.
And I can see many of the topics that we touched in previous episode coming from the top of the big brands. Now you have repurposed even yourself and moved it towards sustainability, becoming a change maker in this field. And now your latest venture and your venture, now your brainchild and the work that is keeping you busy and putting you on the forefront is Una Terra. And Una Terra is a venture fund. You aim at climate mitigation, restoration effort, mainly in Europe. So for the one of us, can you explain what is the fund mission and the objectives? And now you are really transforming the sustainability space.
Absolutely. So Una Terra was born in our minds at least 3 years ago in 2021. But we started asking both investors and company we had already invested in the past, what would they see as the ideal organization and fund that could really make a difference and accelerate the transition? And Una Terra came from that process of really asking and learning from others. So Una Terra is a venture fund with, you know, is domiciled in Luxembourg, as most of the funds, let's say the top ones, and headquartered in Switzerland, but we have partners across Europe. And we decided that our first fund would be focused on Europe, mostly because, you know, Europe is already a lot clearer in terms of regulation and also the, I would say, people have a lot more, you know, inclination of, you know, selecting solutions that are already sustainable, you know, in terms of consumer, etc. And also companies are very much in that direction, even if there's still a lot of work to be done. So The idea of Una Terra is really to, as you mentioned, focus on both climate change and biodiversity loss, because the two are very well connected, and to scale up companies that are already having some level of revenue, so already on the market with products, and accelerate their growth so that we can replace non-sustainable solution with sustainable one, with what we call circular economy. So in practice, all the areas of packaging, waste, sustainable food, agri-tech, fashion, apparel, as well as clean finance, which represent in total 45% of the emissions of CO2 and 90% of the waste that unfortunately still goes into the ocean every year. So our fund has very clear targets of 2 gigatons of CO2 emission, 1 million tons of plastic waste that we want to address over the life of the fund by investing in this company and scale them up. So that's the main mission of Terra as a fund.
Fantastic. And I want to go a bit deeper. You mentioned that you scale company and you have very ambitious target. So I would like to know how you discern and appraise potential investment, especially the one centered on your values and mission.
Very good question. So first of all, they have to be in those industries and in Europe mostly. We can also consider companies from outside Europe as long as they have a presence in Europe or they come into Europe. The idea is that we select companies that are really scalable. Very often companies that have a solution or a product that is very physical, because that's where you can have real impact. We also have invested in artificial intelligence and software, but most of the time we want to see a real impact. You know, we are still in the real world, and that's the only way to have a real solution. You know, we can be very excited about all the new technologies that are coming out, but in the end, it comes down to nature and how can we really impact. So I would say, but we do care of avoiding companies that require an incredible change of the underlying infrastructure that would take forever, right? Because we know that we are under pressure and we need to accelerate this transition. And we can do that only with companies that already have an existing solution and we scale them up as fast as possible. That's why also we avoid technology risk, meaning working with companies that are still, at the research phase. We work with companies with already some solution, but how do we scale them up fast? And in areas where we can really replace non-sustainable solution with sustainable one. Maybe to give you a simple example, we have invested in a company. This is a very simple one.
And we will go deeper on that because we really want to know the examples.
That's perfect. So I can give you plenty of them because we invested already in a few companies. But so one that we invested in the past that is going very well is called Palpex. It's a paper bottle, entirely paper, not with some liner or some plastic component as most of the things out there. And is a Cambridge spin-off, right? So it's a technology-driven company. And what they have been able to do is to create a bottle that can be used on existing filling lines. So a company like, PepsiCo can take a plastic bottle or replace it with a paper bottle. And of course, the advantage of that is that, first of all, it's already a recycled paper. So we're not using any materials from forest. On top of that, paper is recycled already at 85% in Europe, against a 20% at best for plastic bottles. And on top of that, being made of organic material, if by chance it doesn't go in the right place, it will disappear relatively quickly, in water or in land. And as a result, it's biodegradable fully, unlike plastic that will stay for hundreds of years in nature. And so it's already in the market with a few very known products like Johnny Walker Black Label, Life Water for Pepsi, Unilever has put it on some of their detergents, GSK for pharma, etc., etc. So many companies are already in the market with this bottle. Already 4 billion bottles have been sold. A lot more needs to be done, of course, to be present at scale, but it's a really good solution and an easy one, quote unquote, because it doesn't require huge investment from companies. So they cannot say, it's too expensive. And it's very comparable in terms of cost to what you see in the plastic market, but it doesn't use any of the fossil fuel-based plastic that you would typically see. And also can replace glass. In that case, of course, reducing CO2 emissions, because glass is a lot heavier, requires a lot of higher temperature to be made. So, of course, requires a lot of more CO2 emission. This is a very simple example, just to give a product that, you know, everyone uses every day. Why not, you know, at least in part, wherever possible, replace glass or plastic with paper?
No, fantastic. And you can see also, you know, even transportation and logistic with lighter material will reduce emissions and others. So fantastic. And now my subsequent question, now you have elicited our curiosity. We want to know maybe another example of this wonderful solution that you are really fostering.
Absolutely. Another one that, you know, goes maybe to show also that very different technology, maybe a bit more complex to explain. But so we have invested in a company called Grey Parrot. This is an artificial intelligence engine that is used in the sorting lines, so where you are in a recycling center. And the good thing about that is that, you know, today most of the separation of the different material in waste management is done manually or mechanically, which means that, you know, it's not very precise. You use water, you use laser, you use maybe infrared, but you still have a lot of mixed material at the exit of these sorting lines. While with artificial intelligence, you have like almost 99.9% precision. So you have a lot cleaner streams that come out of these sorting lines. And as a result, you can reuse really the products to put them back into recycled material that can be reused in the same products or even for different uses, but at least is reused and not landfilled or incinerated or worse, goes into the ocean. So this company is incredible because it grew very quickly already, you know, hundreds of recycling centers are using it in Europe, in the United States, in Korea, Japan, etc., wherever there is an established recycling infrastructure. And allows also to have all the data to improve for brand owners the quality and the recyclability of their products, so that they can get really the feedback. Well, yes, this one, you know, you think it works, but it has these three issues. Can you fix them so that, you know, next time something is recycled, it's going to work? And the incentives in Europe are also related to regulation, because the more you recycle, the more you pay less of the fees called extended producer responsibility that we have in Europe, that's, you know, in practice subsidize the creation of the, you know, an improved recycling infrastructure. So that's an amazing company doing really well as well, growing fast like the other. Yeah. And these are two in waste. We're of course investing also in companies in food and in fashion that are doing similar thing, mostly closing the loops on this circular economy rather than having this linear, you know, I produce, I use, and then I waste, and I create more and more waste.
And it's really also the purpose of the podcast to give voice to the solution and change maker. Sometimes there is a lot of activism, but we stop there. We also want to know that ingenuity and the capability of the humans are already giving solution. And those ones, let us say low-hanging fruit sometimes we can say, but really, really important. And to do more on your advocacy and showing up to the world, your solution and the work, you are also now become an author. And you have recently launched Standing Up for the Planet, your new book. So we would like to know why you have chosen also to become an author and which are the main topics that you want to share in your book. Fantastic.
Yeah, look, Standing Up for the Planet really has been, you know, an idea that we had as part of the Una Terra, let me say, partnership network, which I can explain in a second. But the book was really, first of all, to thank a lot of the women that have supported us from the beginning, and there are many of them, as investors, as advisor, a company we've invested in, because more than half of the company we invested in actually have a founder and CEO that is a woman. And very often for women is a lot more difficult, particularly in venture capital globally. Only 3% of the money of venture capital goes to CEO and founder that are women, including the United States. So there is not a real support for pretty much half of the population. So we wanted to thank them. We wanted to inspire others, because we constantly get the question, what can I do if I want to do more on sustainability? So here, instead of giving our answer, we give the answer of 45 women who have really changed their life and dedicated it entirely to sustainability. And we try to also give a mix of women. You know, some, of course, they are very accomplished. We have the former chief sustainability officer of Obama, now working with Biden to invest the IRA money in, you know, solar and wind infrastructure. as an example, Christina Rada or Marisa Drew, who is the chief impact officer at Standard Chartered Bank and before at Credit Suisse. But we also have younger generation because, you know, we wanted to inspire also the Gen Zers of this world. So there is Catalina, for instance, who is 22 and has created her own accelerator to have impact in sustainability called Elixir. So I think you can get a lot of different experiences. There is people also working in emerging markets or, you know, in foundations like Leslie Johnston, who is the CEO of the Laudes Foundation. And I think you can get a lot of, you know, good ideas on how to get involved in this movement that we hope is going to continue expanding globally. And in particular, I have to say the leadership of women in this space is unmatched. I think it's probably connected to the fact that they see the planet as, you know, the home, and, you know, there is this, interest in protecting the home where we all live.
Fantastic. And it's really an interesting book. We will put the description in the description, the links, and also you can read the amazing stories of these women and can be a source of inspiration. And I really like what you said, not only the accomplished, because sometimes we have attended, even in academia, even in our in the MBAs, we just focus on the winners. But we have all the, even people that they are starting, like the 22 years old that you have mentioned, from scratch, but building the movement. Those can be also an inspiration for everybody. And you have also an important role in private equity. You have done an extensive experience. And one of the problems that sometimes also we have discussed in the podcast is how to ensure financial flow attain the desired impact, especially on the sustainability side, because that is something that sometimes is still debated.
Yeah, look, absolutely. So for me, first of all, over time, I've decided to spend more and more time on the private equity side of things, so either private equity or venture capital, because I see that as an opportunity to have a longer, let me say, horizon of investment. You know, very often public companies, they have to follow the quarter-to-quarter result, you know, race of Wall Street. And as a result, they tend to have a shorter-term horizon focus, which is unfortunate, because it doesn't allow to make real changes on the sustainability side. And that's where I decided to do more on that. I've also been in public companies. Some of them can do a really good job, but it's very difficult because of the entirely focus on shareholders and on financial. Now, so the whole idea, of course, of the whole sustainability approach is to not only respond to the needs of shareholders, but to include also other stakeholders, like, you know, corporations were set up initially to, you know, to respond to the needs of employees, of customers, of suppliers, and of course, also the environment, which is, you know, a resource that we use very often freely, knowing that it's not free and is not unlimited as we are using it for. So that's where it's important to go, as you say, at a very different level. So in my, you know, private approach, I have Unaterra as the driver of change for really innovative solution that can change dramatically entire industries in time. But because I also want to have immediate, you know, impact on existing companies that are already larger, I am an advisor, for instance, of Advent International, which is a global fund of about 100 billion. And the last fund I raised, which is 25 billion, so completely different scale compared to what we do at Unaterra, has been raised not only with financial returns as main objectives, but also with CO2 emissions and sustainability in general. So what we do there is that we take company by company in their portfolio. Very often, immediately when considering the acquisition in due diligence, but even after the company has been acquired, and we ensure there is a very comprehensive ESG agenda and sustainability plan, which is also in terms of value creation, so not just compliance to regulation or risk avoidance, but really creating true sustainability, which is and should be the main concern of most companies. Because there are very good ways to create value through sustainability. Most obvious ones are on the cost side, right? So if you use less energy, you use less water, you use less waste, you of course can create just, you know, cost reductions, very simple. But even on the product side, imagine that you are, I don't know, generating food for humans, and you can eat it you can make it more and more healthier and better for you, and you avoid, you know, deforestation, you ensure that there is no child labor, no forced labor in the entire supply chain. All of that creates a lot of value, both for people, but also for the consumers. And that's, you know, one of the examples that we've been working on with a very large company, you know, 1.3 billion more or less in sales. So this is a kind of, I think, combination of need to do something now, but also need to prepare the future that I'm trying to achieve by working on both private equity and venture capital.
Fantastic, Luca. And I really like what you said. I think the takeaways, I really like the short-termism and the quarterly calls. Sometimes they drag the system. And so managers, they want financial results rather than thinking long-term. And I really like what you say, the case is the cost, but also the advantage for going sustainable. I will add here also the case for good jobs. If you have less employee turnover, you paying living wage to people, then you have what you said at the beginning, the corporation that in the past had the responsibility even for their context, for their people. And you will have better employees, less turnover, and especially also a better consumer experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is not just environmental factor. You're right. It's absolutely the social side. And we see that over and over, people get more excited, in particularly the new generation, seeing that there is a really good purpose for the company and that they have a really positive impact on the planet and people. And as a result, they get really engaged. And you can see it like it starts from the top. And then at some point, it starts like going into every single employee feeling, you know, they're really doing something for the world. So I think, yes, it does create less turnover of employees and a lot higher engagement, which means, you know, in the end, people are passionate about what they're doing, which is, you know, the best result you can get.
Fantastic. And I want to go a subsequent question. Positive engagement, less turnover, people that they want to work with purpose were one of the benefits that were cited in my research during my MBA for B Corp. And you are also a B Corp. Unaterra is a B Corp. So what is the value and why as a founder and now in the CEO, why you have gone for B Corp certification? Which advantages has given you?
I think, you know, B Corp is a great, you know, grassroots, let me say, type of movement, because it started a lot from, you know, smaller corporations and companies. You know, of course, there are some big ones now, like Danone in the US. But you know, it's really about having a real purpose and also going into the details of what it means to have a very structured approach to ESG and sustainability. So for us, it was really like a way to ensure that we go through all the details, that we don't forget any of the relevant components, you know, both on the, you know, let me say, risk management side and the compliance side, all the policies that are required, but also in the creation of value for, you know, our stakeholders, both, you know, the people who have invested in our fund, but also all the company we invest in, and eventually the consumer or whoever is going to use their solutions. And it's also a way to have a continuous process, right? Because the moment you get B Corp certification, you also engage into improving your scores, right? And we have already a pretty good score, but I think there is a lot more to be done. And we know which are the areas that you know we can play on. And the other part I think that is very relevant is being part of the network, right? Is support each other in the B Corps. We're part of the Swiss one just because we're based here. But we also are very present as a part of B Lab Europe and also globally. I think so whenever there is, you know, it's almost being part of that movement helps you thinking through how to help others and how to support each other in this transition that we believe is unstoppable. It's just a matter of, you know, going faster to have an immediate impact.
Fantastic, Luca. And it's really also you have confirmed with the benefits of the certification and also the reason why it's growing is becoming a relevant and important movement even worldwide. And now you have touched and you have given us wonderful example of companies you are investing, really transforming lives and touching on the life of many people. And if possible, we would like to know, where do you want to take Unaterra? Which are the upcoming collaboration or partnership that you want to share with us?
Absolutely. So this is very important for us because we are not just a fund investing in companies, and we don't think, you know, money is the only thing that company that need to grow and scale up need. So Unetera is really a platform for acceleration of the growth of companies. So we have a partnership related to how do we grow company faster and substitute non-sustainable solution. We have partnership to make them more visible from a communication perspective, with, you know, both social media and more traditional media. We have partnership with academic institutions to help these companies, you know, learn more about sustainability and be able to integrate sustainability in their day-to-day operations. And we also have a philanthropic initiative to help where capital cannot have a return, but it's still important to have it either in the global south or in places where, you know, we're addressing not environmental concerns like the one of the funds, but maybe poverty or health or equity. And it's a lot more difficult to have, you know, a calculated financial return. So, yeah, so we have partnership like with EIT Climate Kick, which is the knowledge and innovation community of the European Union. They are the largest accelerator globally, entirely dedicated to sustainability, present in 33 cities around Europe with more than 2,000 companies already financed to really transition different industries. And so we work with them to have a better sense of which are the great solutions out there, which are the trends in innovation, which are the technology centers where we can find different solutions, but also to be able to shape demand for those companies, because since they are helping the European Union, for instance, with making cities more sustainable faster with the 2030 cities coalition, they can really provide these companies with additional market, like the public market that is not always considered by these companies. Or we are a partner of the Elemicata Foundation for a Circular Economy, or Cambridge and St. Gallen for specific educational activities. We are also partnered with the Foundation of the Prince of Monaco and Monaco Assets, because they are very, for a long time, they've been very much focused on the oceans. And of course, plastic pollution in the ocean is a very big issue, but the oceans are also the largest carbon sink globally. So it's very important that we protect them. And since no one feels they're owning the oceans, right? You don't have a country or multiple countries. It's actually one of the areas where there is less investments despite the importance. So we work with them to ensure that we accelerate investment and solution for the ocean. So for instance, we will be in March at the Ocean Innovation Summit in Monaco to be able to do that. And many others, right? I'm not going to name them all, but I think the idea is that we want to create this really global collaboration that allows us almost to create a movement that is unstoppable. We call it radical collaboration because it's really about system change and no one of us can provide the entire solution. So we're not going to reinvent the wheel. Every time we are missing a component for our, you know, agenda, we try to go out and find the best possible partner to be able to do that, really, in terms of growing company, in terms of talent, in terms of education, in terms of everything that is required to accelerate the transition that we all want to see.
Fantastic. It's like an ecosystem, or maybe say it plainly, a one-stop solution for companies that want to be in this change and they want to change. And I really like what you say. So you can span from academia to philanthropy and especially the managerial support. And what, of course, important is the funds, the funding support done in the proper way. So a wonderful example of not just funding and goals, but a 360 solution. And for people that listen to us all over the world, and then we have listeners from, sometimes I say from India to West Indies, from Iceland to South Africa, every country has been touched from the podcast. What message or advice as an expert, as a global expert in sustainability, you want to give to our audience?
I think the most important thing is to get involved in any shape or form. You can get involved as a consumer, selecting the right products, the more sustainable, and learn which ones are really truly sustainable. You can get involved as a voter, right? And there are something like 4 billion people that are going to vote between this year and next year. So a lot of changes can be done by selecting the right leadership within each country. We know both Europe and the United States are going to have new leadership, so they make sure they are the one who are going to support this transition and accelerate the solution rather than being in the end of the fossil fuel, you know, lobby. And beyond that, you know, of course, you know, work for companies that really believe this is an important part. Don't be afraid of, you know, change your career or create a portfolio career that allows you to have, you know, multiple components. I know sometimes it's difficult and, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, but I think it's important. And so in any shape or form you can contribute, I think this is going to be a real economical, social transition like we've not seen in hundreds of years. We are lucky to be present, but I think we have to contribute significantly for the long-term benefit of the next generation and the planet that we all live in.
Fantastic. And thank you so much, Luca. Such an inspiring moment. Take charge, act, vote, be responsible. And that exactly also what we are trying to contribute with the podcast and trying to give voice to change makers like you and others around the world, really to inspire people. So thank you so much, Luca. It's been a real honor, pleasure having you the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Are you satisfied after this wonderful episode? Let's continue together our sustainability journey.